Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medel with you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513. That is one way you can interact with us here on the program. Also on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get into a variety of different topics over the next 60 minutes. Conference Championship Weekend wrapped up yesterday. We'll look ahead to Super Bowl 52, which will be a rematch of Super Bowl 39 between the Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles, who will be representing the NFC East. I'm sure that is very difficult for most Giants fans to digest. I know it's very difficult for Paul Dottino to digest, but we will get into all of that, and we'll look ahead to the Giants coaching search, as obviously the rumorville continues to circulate, but nothing is official from the Giants standpoint. Let's start with the playoffs, Paul, and I don't think many people were surprised that Jacksonville-New England game was close. Jacksonville, one of the best defenses in the NFL. Tom Brady pulled off another dramatic come-from-behind victory, and, you know, it's a matter of that game, a tale of two halves to me for the Jacksonville Jaguars. The aggressiveness of the play calling that was being showcased in the first half, I don't think was then duplicated in the second half, and that's the way that New England was able to creep back into the game.
Agreed. Tom Brady now 3-4 in the last 10 years in fourth quarter comebacks of 10 points or more. He certainly has a knack for it, doesn't
he? Including last year's Super Bowl, yes.
You know, the thing about it is, they're so surgical. They're so good at what they do. They're so good at finding ways to beat you. And they're so good at their execution that a 10-point lead with a minute gone by in the fourth quarter, you might as well play that game like you're tied, because it's clearly not enough. I mean, to me, not only did the ultra-conservative play calling hurt the Jaguars, because clearly the game of field position – destroyed them in the latter part of that game.
Special teams was huge for New England.
We talk about that all the time.
Oh, without a doubt.
Special teams get so undervalued and underrated. And remember, Belichick is a stickler for special teams. But to me, it was the failed opportunity right before the end of the first half when the Jaguars had the chance to go up 17-3 at the very least. They were 14-3. In Patriots territory, they get called for just an insane delay of game penalty.
Out of a timeout, by the way.
Which
to me is inexcusable.
I can't imagine what was going on there. And they wind up taking a big play off the board, okay? Then because of that penalty, which set them back, they wind up having to punt the ball. So instead of maybe kicking a field goal and going up 17-3 into the half, with the Patriots taking the third quarter kickoff, by the way, Brady gets the ball back, goes in and scores, and then knows he's getting the ball to start the third quarter again. To me.
Well, the Jaguars got it at the start of third, because remember, they deferred. Tom Brady and to start the game.
I take that
back. But your point is well taken in terms of momentum at the end of the second quarter. I agree with
you,
Paul.
It should have been 17-3.
No doubt. You had a scoring opportunity.
Instead, it was 14-10.
And here's also what happened. Remember, not only did Brady and the Patriots get the ball back, you had two defensive penalties on Jacksonville. You had the helmet-to-helmet hit on Barry Church, and then you had the defensive pass interference down the left sideline on Brandon Cooks.
Be honest, I had no trouble with those calls.
Neither did I. I had no trouble with any of the offensive penalties against Jacksonville either. It was a legitimate delay of game. It was a legitimate hold. And I understand it's easy for fans to constantly criticize the officials. But, Paul, I will always say this. Good teams, great teams overcome the officials and find a way to put those plays behind them and still get the first down. And another thing I want to add is, for anybody continuing to point to the officials, because I know there were six penalties on the Patriots,
six against the Jaguars.
Third and 18. Jacksonville's got one of the best defenses in the NFL.
They give up
Does that have anything to do with the officials, Paul?
No.
Yes, New England converted that third and 18. So I don't want to hear anything about the officials. I'm sorry.
Might have to do something with the fact that the Jaguars' four-man pass rush got gassed in the second half and just did not have enough in their tanks.
On the field a lot.
You know, you want to talk about how that game in a lot of ways to some people as it was being played. I saw a lot of folks posting on the internet that it reminded them of how the Giants had beaten the Patriots in the Super Bowls twice, and that they slowed down, methodical, little nickel and dime stuff.
Ran the ball.
Tough defense, clock management, field position. In a lot of ways, the characteristics were similar to those Giants games. But, big difference is that In the Giants games, that Giants pass rush was able to get to Brady throughout the course of the games. Okay? Even in moments or drives, specific possessions where they didn't, they then geared it up again on the next one. They were able to, if not consistently, periodically get to him. In the second half, how many times did the Jags get to Brady?
Well, and that's the game of adjustments. Yeah, the first half, they were wreaking havoc. Brady was seeing ghosts. I mean, he was going down, and nobody was even in his vicinity because he was anticipating the pass rush.
And they were keeping in company with him, I'll tell
correct.
You that right now.
And we've seen that, you know, to bring it back to the Giants, we've seen that with Eli Manning even sometimes, where all of a sudden the pass rush is coming, and he has a moment or he has a second, and, you know, he's even thinking about going down. So a pass rush could be effective. We've seen that as the best way to slow down Brady. The Giants showed that. The Broncos showed that a few years ago in the conference championship game. Those are the two ingredients. Running game to milk the clock and wear down the Patriots' defense, and then on the opposing side, have the pass rush to get to Brady. Jacksonville had all of those things clicking in the first half. The second half, those things slowly disappeared. New England made the adjustments. They got the special teams play. I mean, a lot of people are also going to point to, Paul, when you had the big first down by New England off a trick play, and then Miles Jack stripped the ball away, that if the official did not call and blow the whistle, that maybe Jack had an opportunity to return that for a touchdown. I mean, those are obviously the human elements of a football game. I think they would have taken a look at that in fairness, though, that Jack may have been touched as he takes the ball away and is rolling over.
I don't think he was getting up for a touchdown,
exactly.
Even if they gave him the ball.
And that has been completely removed from the dialogue because everybody's pointing that, oh, that's a Jacksonville touchdown.
Yeah.
For all we know, he's ruled down because he was touched as he rolled over.
Let me just say this, and I asked you this last week. I talked to John about it on our show last week also. In general, looking at these playoff games, we're now one game away from the finale of the postseason. Give me a total number of drops that you've seen in these games. Total, combined, by all the teams in all the playoff games. What do you think it is?
Well,
I don't know what it is, but it certainly seems like it's about a half a dozen and no more.
I would say that may be fair. Kansas City had a number of drops, though, Paul. You go back to that Kansas City-Tennessee game.
They killed
Alex Smith.
They did.
He had a number of opportunities for first down. So that game alone may have had three or four. So I think it's a little bit more than your estimation. If you're going to combine all of the teams
let's
together.
Let's put Kansas City out of the equation because they were so much one and done, and that's part of the reason why they were out.
The
point I was
going
to make, really, and I think you know what I'm getting to.
Well, to bring it back to the Giants.
Simply put, how many guys in Giants skill positions go out there and consistently make the plays they're supposed to make for Eli? How many of them make a tough catch look routine outside of Odell Beckham Jr.? Okay. Who does that on this team? Who? More often than not, you're left scratching your head and shaking your head and saying, okay, he dropped that. Or it was an easy one. Or it was a tough catch. You got to make it. He didn't make it. That's what you're left with every single week with the Giants because these guys don't make the plays for Eli like these playoff teams, skill position players, are making the plays for these guys. I'd love to see the high execution of these receivers and these running backs and these tight ends because it is such a pleasure. It's almost like watching a Baryshnikov ballet for those of you who like the arts in Lincoln Center.
I'm surprised you didn't go with the food analogy.
No, I'm not,
you're
by the way.
You're versatile now.
I have no use for ballet, but I understand how that people have often said the NFL is the athletic version of the ballet.
It's an art.
Okay? Nothing is more beautiful than to see a pinpoint pass or even one that's not pinpoint. And the receiver goes up and makes a play and brings it down. First down, 35-yard gain, or Amendola in the end zone for the touchdown.
He was going to be the name I was just going to bring up.
That's what these skill position players have done throughout the postseason. The Steelers did it in the game last
Antonio
week.
Antonio Brown, beating A.J. Boye on two plays.
That's such a huge difference. Those plays.
The above the X's and O's types of plays, as we like to call them.
Those plays get you into the postseason. Those plays give you a chance to stay alive. Those plays don't leave you at home for Christmas. That's all I'm saying.
No, I think that point is well taken. Amendola, some of the plays he made in the second half, it's a big reason why New England won that game. He went up to make big plays for his quarterback, which is what you want to see. Eagles, as we move to the NFC Championship game, Nick Foles had a lot of wide-open opportunities down the field, but Alshon Jeffrey made plays. Zach Ertz made plays.
Diggs last week.
Diggs is another one with the Vikings. Yeah. You need your talent. You need your skill set positions to make the plays. And here's another perfect example. Case Keenum on the flip side. That game was obviously much more lopsided. Credit goes to the Philadelphia defense, which just absolutely manhandled the Vikings in the trenches on both sides of the football, I would make the argument. But Case Keenum, the two interceptions, which were huge turning points in the game.
Yes.
People are going to point to, oh, here we go, Case Keenum coming back down to earth, not making good decisions. He was hit on both of those turnovers. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, it was one fumble and one interception.
Right.
It wasn't two interceptions.
Correct.
The first interception, he was hit by Chris Long. Mm-hmm. That clearly impacted the throw, Paul. That led to a pick six. By the way, the Eagles did a tremendous job blocking up the field to allow the cornerback to move from the left side to the right side. So that's another X's and O's going above the play, seeing and surveying the field. And then the second play, Derek Barnett, their first-round pick, who coincidentally they got – that first-round pick out of the Sam Bradford trade, mm-hmm. wound up hitting Case Keenum. He loses the football, and there's all of a sudden another stalled Vikings drive. So, you know, sometimes you got to give credit to the defenses. It's not necessarily, oh, the quarterback wasn't good and he didn't make good decisions. It was the defense, to me, making those game-changing plays that clearly steered the direction of that game.
And let me just get something out of the way right now, Lance. Before we go any further, I know we want to get to the calls now. We're kind of deep into the program. For everybody out there who is – thinking about Pat Shurmur, okay, and there are a lot of fans out there who were discussing Pat Shurmur either amongst themselves or on the radio or on the internet.
Media reports, yeah.
Okay? For everybody who's thinking about him, I'm seeing an awful lot of panic since last night. Oh, my goodness, the Vikings offense did nothing against the Philadelphia defense in this game. This is some reason to panic. This is just terrible. Pat Shurmur was the offensive coordinator in that game. Oh, no. What happened? The sky is falling. No. Sometimes teams just have really bad games, and sometimes it happens in a really bad spot when they happen to be going up against a team that's playing really well, and you
Absolutely.
Just get hammered. That's what happened yesterday. The Philadelphia Eagles were clicking on all cylinders on both sides of the ball. The Minnesota Vikings just did not have it yesterday. Maybe, just maybe, they used up all their gas in their tank by beating the Saints last week, which we all know was probably about the most emotional kind of victory that you could possibly create. And let's not be throwing stones at Pat Shurmur. Whether or not, you know, something happens here is irrelevant. Pat Shurmur does not deserve to get stoned over this Vikings offensive performance. Let me just make that clear.
Player execution is a big part of whether or not teams win or lose, despite whatever the coaching strategy is. With that being said, let's also not overlook the fact that this Eagles defense is a top five scoring defense in the NFL during the regular season. It wasn't as if they went up against the bottom of the barrel. And I would also point to the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, Paul, which has been also an elite defense like Minnesota. Also had a rough second half. I mean, they slowed down Tom Brady in the first half, but things fell apart in the second half. And that had been a well-disciplined defense. That had been a defense that prevented big plays for the most part during the regular season. Sometimes when you go up against elite competition, you're going to have rough performances. One game should not define a player. One game should not define a coach. I think that's the fair way to look
Absolutely.
At it. With that being said, let's open up the phone lines. You want to get into the championship games. You want to look ahead to the Super Bowl. You want to discuss the Giants coaching search. Everything is up for debate here on Giants Big Blue Kickoff Live. 201-939-4513. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday edition. Tony's in D.C. Tony, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I'm so happy to talk to you about this AFC championship game.
Okay.
All right. What do you got?
Here's the thing. Here's my opening controversial comment. I am so sick of the Giants being the only team that's not afraid of the New England Patriots. The Jaguars did not lose because of officiating. They lost because the coaches tried to out-Belichick Belichick, plain and simple. when they took a knee with 55 seconds left before the half and having two timeouts remaining, and they took a knee the first time all season a team did that, that's when I knew, well, this game is over. This game is over. And then you go into the second half. You go from man-to-man to zone, and you don't bring in a linebacker or a free safety or a strong safety for the pass rush. What? It's unbelievable. And then on offense, they ran the ball up the middle every single first down to get stuffed. I mean, my God, Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning proved it twice already. Man-to-man, rush the passer on defense, offense, establish the play action, pick your places. But these teams, not just the Jaguars, but all of these teams that play them get so intimidated and try to make all these weird adjustments. Like with the penalties, the reason why they were getting all of these pass interference calls is because they went to zone, they couldn't keep up with the speed of receivers. Their coaches put their players in the worst positions in that second half, and Brady dinked and dunked his way to another Super Bowl.
Well, in fairness, Tony, Jacksonville's cornerbacks are efficient enough to play one-on-one coverage zone. It makes no difference. I mean, you're talking about Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye have been two of the top corners, two of the most dynamic corners this season.
Good.
So, I mean,
very
I'm not going to fault the Jacksonville coaching staff for putting some of those guys off and on an island and saying, hey, go win your battles. They've been doing that all season. So, I mean, I think that criticism may be taking it a little too far. As far as the execution,
it wasn't an island. It was zone.
No, but what I'm saying is no matter what the scheme is, Jacksonville's defense, they've played a mixture of both this season, and they've executed at a high level. So I don't think they got away from what worked for them during the regular season or they were getting too creative. I think what happened also in the second half is the New England Patriots did a better adjustment in stopping the run game because Jacksonville was running all over them in the first half. I mean, Leonard Fournette, Corey Grant, it made no difference who Jacksonville was utilizing in the backfield. And then the other thing is, New England made some really good defensive plays. For example, Blake Bortles, that throw that sealed the end of the game. Stephon Gilmore, let's give him a lot of credit. I mean, that was textbook coverage.
What a play.
Was that not, Paul?
What a play.
That was textbook coverage.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, I mean, is that the Jacksonville offensive coaching staff not knowing what it's doing? Or you tip your cap to the cornerback on New England, you say, hey, you were well-disciplined, you used your hands, you went up, you didn't touch your offensive player, and you made the play. I mean, sometimes you can't just keep pointing the finger at people, and you just got to say, New England executed better than Jacksonville. And to me, it was as simple as that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I do agree New England executed better. I mean, but you can't lose yourself. I mean, to run the ball literally up the middle, not even like a variety of running plays on first down. They ran the ball up the middle on every first down play for stuff.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, and I'm looking, and I'm sitting here like, we all know if you want to beat Brady, you have to get pressure on him. There is, if your four rushes are smoked, then you got to bring in some blitzes.
You know what's funny? We didn't have enough callers complaining about the Giants all year. Now we got them complaining about other teams. I'm getting a headache from all this. I really am.
Well, it's a little refreshing, I'll be honest with you, Paul. I'd rather talk about some of the other teams.
But here's my closing argument, and I'll let you guys get on some other callers. Coughlin and Belichick came up together, as you guys know, under the Parcells regime. So, you know, Coughlin is not intimidated by Belichick.
No.
One iota.
No.
And Eli Manning was the number one pick in the draft going against a sixth-round pick. And I'm not saying that makes a difference per se, but Eli Manning isn't scared of anybody either.
No.
Coughlin and Manning have never played a game scared. I'm telling you, teams play the Patriots scared. That's why no one can beat them. Coughlin and Manning are not afraid of Belichick and Brady, and that is why they can beat them. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Tony. I mean, listen, the other thing to take into consideration here, and I know the Tom Coughlin narrative is convenient and it's nice. Tom Coughlin, let's not forget, was not on the sideline in that game.
No, he was not
the head coach. Doug Marrone was the head coach. Doug Marrone, I think, also deserves credit for how far the Jaguars came along this season. You know, Once again, Coughlin deserves credit, too. He's done a great job in the front office, but I almost feel like what gets lost in translation, Paul, is Doug Marrone was the head coach of this team. Can the guy get a little credit?
Well, Marrone himself has given an awful lot of credit to Coach Coughlin, though.
He has.
And I call him Coach Coughlin because that's what he does. He actually calls him coach all the time.
Well, that's a sign of respect,
you
like you
said.
You
get the opinion, or at least the perception, if not an opinion, that there has been a lot of cooperative efforts here. that Coach Coughlin has had a tremendous influence on what is going on.
Those are the teams, though, that have success when the front office and the coaching staff is on the same page. So
no question.
That's not a surprise to hear. All I'm pointing out is that, you know, everybody was pointing to, well, Coughlin has Belichick's number and this and that. But the dynamics were a little bit different this season because it was Doug Marrone on the sideline, not Tom Coughlin.
By the way, and I know that September 2018 is still many months away, but for how many months have I been trying to tell the doubters that Eli Manning is the Giants' starting quarterback in 18? How many months? Since October, was it, when I first started?
Well, I feel like we've had those conversations because we've been speculating so much about the young quarterbacks.
Because you've been on board with me with this, that Eli was going to be the guy all along. Well, we had how many newspaper articles between October and now saying that Eli shouldn't be the starter, they should trade Eli, Jacksonville. How many articles did you read about speculation, Eli being traded to Jacksonville? Well, let's see. We've gone through all of the evidence that the Giants have put forth that indicates Eli is going to be the starter in 18. And on top of that, Blake Bortles played really well yesterday. I mean, if I were a Jacksonville Jaguars fan, I think I'd probably stick with Blake Bortles right now. I don't know that I'd be too eager to be making any deals for anybody, because Blake Bortles is making less than $20 million a year. I think he's at 19.
He's on a rookie contract, so.
Okay.
And he still has another year left on his deal. He's not a free agent.
He's not.
They don't have to make
a decision
on him.
And they got this far with Blake Bortles, and he played well yesterday. So why in the world, if you were a Jacksonville person, would you, you know, come through with a boatload of picks to make a trade for Eli Manning or anybody else? The whole Eli to Jacksonville story was such a crock of baloney from the get-go. I can't imagine how anybody worth their grain of salt could look themselves in the mirror and write that.
It's the game of speculation, Paul.
Amazing.
And there's not much to focus on with respect to the team.
We can finally put it to rest now, though. Finally.
You would assume, but it's not so easy, because here's the thing. We still have an entire offseason ahead of us.
I know.
People are going to speculate. You know how that works. On that point, though, what I wanted to bring up, I spoke to, on my SiriusXM program this weekend, Michael Hugh. I don't know if you remember that name. He was the VP of football operations for the Jaguars when Tom Coughlin was the head coach.
I did not remember
that.
And
I was asking him about what the mindset would be with Blake Bortles heading into this offseason. Not necessarily bring up Eli Manning, but what he brought up was that you have to remember when Tom Coughlin was the head coach with the Jaguars, how they built that team through the expansion draft. Mm-hmm. They built that team just like when the Giants were at their peak, with the offensive line. Tony Boselli was their first ever draft pick, right, Paul? You're with me here.
Absolutely.
Because I know you love this philosophy.
Absolutely.
The trenches, the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Taylor was a draftee early because they wanted the running game. Who was his quarterback? It was Mark Brunell.
Correct.
Mark Brunell was a backup in Green Bay who they had signed. So my point is,
and by the way, they picked up Jimmy Smith and Keenan McCardell off the trash heap.
That's another good example.
Those guys have been cut by like three teams apiece.
Yeah. So he was finding guys that looked to redeem themselves. He was investing in young players who were going to help in other positions. Mm-hmm. The quarterback position, and I know the amount of money that quarterbacks are making is a little bit different than what it was back then.
It's warped now.
But my point is, he built around the trenches. So what would make you think that Tom Coughlin, now that he's running a front office again, because he did have influence in the front office the first time there, would all of a sudden start
saying,
he was
the front office the first time there.
But what would make you think that now he would all of a sudden get rid of that initial philosophy that helped him win football games in Jacksonville?
Well, that's why he brought Marrone in. Marrone is a trenches guy.
Yeah, so now all of a sudden he wants to spend $25 million on a quarterback in the open
Writers
market?
Need something to write. That's what it comes down to.
So, I mean, I brought that point up because I think it was related. Let's head back to the lines. Ken is in New Jersey. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Hi.
Doing well, Ken. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm very disappointed that the Eagles won yesterday. Let's put it that way. I live in Central Jersey. There's a lot of Eagles fans around here. I work with a lot of Eagles fans, and they are all giddy, and I'm sick to my stomach.
Understandable.
I do have a question. Is Shane Vereen under contract still?
No. He's an unrestricted free agent.
Okay. I want to know what dead weight, I'm not calling Shane Vereen dead weight, but what kind of guys could we get rid of so we can pick up an offensive lineman in free agency? I'm looking at Soldier over on the Patriots. I watched him run downfield and get a heck of a block yesterday, and I was like, ooh, that's what we need.
Yeah, Soldier is by far the number one resume available amongst the unrestricted free agent tackles in this year's free agent crop. Now, that means, by the way, he is going to cost a boatload of money. because after him, the only resume that even qualifies as a quality proven NFL resume at tackle belongs to Justin Pugh. And after that, you know, there's quite a drop off. However, here's what I would tell you, okay? I've already done some free agency research, and in my mind, there are some intriguing second level guys who fit the Sean O'Hara description. If you remember, it was Dave Gettleman who went after Sean O'Hara, plucked him off of Cleveland.
Yeah.
You know, told Ernie, of course, he signed this guy, and he wound up becoming a Super Bowl champion. It seems to me, and this is not the organization speaking, this is simply me, based on second-level possibilities along the offensive line, Cameron Fleming is an unrestricted free agent by the Patriots. He started at right tackle yesterday. Leandre Waddle, who is a former Lion and has come back from injury to also start a number of games for the Patriots at tackle. Those two fellas, they've got Soldier, Fleming, and Waddle. They have three veteran tackles. They're not signing all of them. I don't see any way Belichick signs all of them. I would suggest to you that a team in need of an offensive tackle should explore one of those three guys. Again, Soldier's going to cost you a boatload, but the other two guys probably won't cost you much. I would suggest those two guys from the Patriots tackle spot would be rather intriguing to somebody looking to upgrade the position. Did I say that delicately enough?
Yeah, the other thing that I just wanted to add, Ken, because, I mean, I believe what you were alluding to earlier was the fact that if the Giants were to create some more cap space, they'd have some more flexibility to go out and sign free agents. And I just want to point back to when Kevin Abrams was interim general manager and spoke to the media for the first time, he was asked, well, can you assess what the cap situation is going to look like in the offseason? He said, as of right now, we think we're in a very healthy position. And this was before the season even ended.
Yeah, he said the cap would not impede them from doing what he thinks they need to do.
Yeah.
Okay. I want the offensive line fixed, and mainly because I don't want to draft a quarterback. I want to fix the offensive line. I like you, Paul. Like Davis Webb, I mentioned. I haven't seen him play, but I mean the kid is such a hard worker. All I hear are good things. I mean that stuff can't be bad. I'll take hard work over talent any day, because they got something to prove. The problem that people are having with the game yesterday in New England, I'm not saying the refs did anything. I didn't see it this way. But a lot of people assumed that one of the referees was celebrating with the Patriots after a touchdown.
My God. I don't want to go there. I mean, I have no idea, and I don't care.
Ken, it's such a reach. People just, they try to grasp onto things. It's such a reach. I know what you're talking about. The Patriots were celebrating the end zone. The ref was right in the middle of it. He was trying to get out of the way. And now all of a sudden, people take photos and put it up on Twitter and make a whole conspiracy theory out of it. I mean, we're getting to the point where it's so ridiculous, Ken. I'm not blaming you. I understand that you're seeing it. But
the dark side. And when you're in the dark side, like the Yankees, people are going to come up with all kinds of reasons. I just am upset that I have to sweat another Patriots Super Bowl, because I want to go down in history as the only franchise to beat the Brady Belichick.
Understood.
You know, I hear you.
Understood.
Yeah.
I just don't want to sweat another one. So let's please just go out. Let's go, Patriots. Go out there and kick the crap out of them Eagles. Thanks, guys, for taking
care. I can appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the lines. We got Marcus in Philly. Marcus, I don't know how you're doing today. What's happening?
Hello.
How you guys doing? First and foremost, I heard you guys talking about Pat Shurmur. This wasn't one of my questions, but I actually love the hire. He studied with North Turner, who I absolutely love. He studied under Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly was what he was, but you know, I like what Chip Kelly brought to the table. So me myself personally, I don't look at the game last night in any way, shape, or form in changing my opinion. I love the Pat Shurmur hire. So that's how I feel about Pat Shurmur. But I actually was calling for a comment and I guess a couple questions. My comment is, I actually had to work last night in the city in Philadelphia, and I must say that these Philadelphia fans, not all of them, but it was just an absolute embarrassment the way that they behaved last night, pummeling these Minnesota fans. The bus for Minnesota Vikings, they were trying to leave the stadium, and they pummeled it with bottles and beer cans. So it was a total embarrassment to the city of Philadelphia. So that it was a disgrace. So, and maybe this is the reason why the city of Philadelphia is cursed when it comes to our football team. I am a Giants fan, so I'm not saying our, meaning I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, but the city of Philadelphia, because the way they behave is just an absolute disgrace. So I just wanted to say that right off the top.
Marcus, were you the one? Were you the one greasing up the poles last night? Were you responsible for that? No, is that why you were busy last night?
Believe it or not, they still found ways.
I saw a photo. No, I did. I saw that, Marcus. Yeah, you're right. I saw one guy. He somehow got to the top of one of the traffic light poles. It's amazing, unreal. They must have missed one, apparently. So. Yeah.
It was unreal. But I actually have two questions. My first question is, I heard the gentleman just before me talking about the offensive line. I love Gettleman because I know he believes in building the offensive line.
Right.
And everybody that's Giants fans know that's our number one problem. I know that we have the number two pick, and picking guards, it's taboo at number two.
Right.
So I'm figuring maybe if we could move back. I don't know if you guys, Paulie, I don't know if you have the opportunity to look at any tape, but this kid, Quentin Nelson, out of Notre Dame.
He's a first-round guard. There's no question.
He is a monster. He rates actually higher than Zach Martin coming out of college. And if you watch, I'm not a NFL film breakdowner, if you will, but I've watched tape of this guy. This guy mauls everyone that he comes in contact with, and he could be a staple for our offensive line for many, many years to come if we could get this guy. I think we may be able to move back maybe a couple picks, pick up an extra couple picks, but this guy is phenomenal, and I would love to have him on our offensive line.
The philosophy is obviously you want to draft tackles higher than you do guards. That's just the way it usually goes. And so, you know, the question would be, first of all, how far do you want to move down? And then second of all, there are three or maybe even four bona fide first-round tackles available in this draft. So do you pass on one of those guys to take Nelson, who I agree with you. He is an absolute blue-chip pedigree guard. I've watched Notre Dame enough during the course of the season to know how great he is. I think he's a better prospect than McGlinchey at tackle, to be quite frank with you. But that doesn't mean you pick him in the top five. That's gotcha. a real tough thing to do.
And Marcus, here's the other thing. When you look at Dave Gettleman's track record in Carolina, and I just brought it up just to confirm, you know, he wasn't somebody that went after offensive linemen in the first round.
Well, that doesn't
mean that that's not going to happen here with the Giants, but my point is he's taken guys in the third round, he's taken guys in the fourth round, and they've actually turned out to be solid players. Trey Turner, he took a guard in the third round, and Turner has played at a very high level. And then he took Darrell Williams, the tackle, in the fourth round at 15.
Gettleman ran four drafts for the Panthers. He never took a trenches player that is either offensive line or defensive lineman lower than the fourth round. Now, that says to me that he believes in taking legit prospects in the trenches. He's not going to gamble by taking a fifth, sixth, or seventh rounder and say, well, we think he's a diamond in the rough, he's a dark horse, we're going to take a shot and just see if he can compete and win a job. It says to me, if he's going fourth round and up, or should I say first to fourth round, however you want to phrase it, it says to me that he has conviction in those guys. And he's not just going to throw a flyer at the trenches. If he needs a guy from the trenches, he's going to make sure the guy has a make it grade on it. And by the way, my understanding, I have not gotten into my tape review. Obviously, I've watched some college games this year. I've talked to some personnel people and some scouts. I've done a little bit of preliminary research. I hear there are four rounds of make-it offensive linemen in this draft, and it's much deeper than it was last year, especially at the tackle spot. That's good for the Giants, especially with Gettleman running the show.
Okay. Just two more things. One, I really can't stand the Patriots, but living in Philly, I got to pull for the Patriots because I received every phone call and every tweet probably from everybody that knows I'm a Giants fan last night just killing me. So I got to root for the Patriots. That's one. And I have a question. I'll take this answer off the air. I read, and, you know, you can only read so much, but Schumer, he looked at Jack Del Rio as a possible defensive coordinator, someone that he would possibly be interested in if he got the job here. Have you guys heard anything about that? And if so, you know, if you can comment on it, that'd be great. Thank you guys for taking my call. And
take care.
Dance off the
air. All right, Marcus, appreciate the phone call. I mean, I have seen the reports. It's simply a report at this point. I mean, obviously the team has not made any hiring of anybody, whether it be the head coach, coaching staff members, or so forth. So, I mean, I can just tell you my personal opinion of Jack Del Rio. I think Jack Del Rio has been a solid head coach in Jacksonville. I think that Oakland, I understand they went for the big name with Gruden, but I think he won more games in Oakland than most of his predecessors had, and I think it warranted him getting another season at least. And if you look at his track record, he was the Denver Broncos defensive coordinator. I thought he did a solid job there too. He's a former linebacker himself. He played in the NFL, so he has experience as a player, as a coach. He's been a head man. He understands what it means in terms of running a team. So, you know, whenever you have an experienced guy like that, it never hurts if you were at least debate about bringing him into a team.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question when you talk about him as a football guy, because he played middle linebacker with the Vikings and some other teams as well, that he understands the value of the front seven and understands the value of a good offensive line that competes against the front seven. That, to me, is a good frame of reference for him as a football guy. Whatever happens with his future, that's not something that, you know, we can talk about.
No, absolutely. The only other thing that I was going to add is whenever you do consider bringing in a coordinator, Paul, that has prior head coaching experience, that's only going to help your head coach, too, because it's somebody that knows that if they go out on their island and they run their own facet of the team, you don't have to necessarily babysit them consistently and worry about what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So that, I think, helps any staff if you just look at it like that. And I bring up Sean McVay brought in Wade Phillips as his defensive coordinator. Wade Phillips was also a former head coach.
Yes.
So that helps.
It's true.
With respect to that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. AJ's in South Carolina. What's happening, AJ?
Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I think the Giants need to fix their linebacking court and hold the Giants out of Kevin O'Sheffer.
Well, appreciate the phone call, AJ. I believe he was referring to the linebackers, that's a position that he would like to see the Giants address. And, you know, they have some free agents at that position, Paul. That's going to be a transitional position this offseason, depending on what Dave Gettleman wants to do, because you have some veterans that were on one-year contracts, and then you have, like, the Devon Kennards of the world.
He's up.
Who the rookie contracts have expired.
He's
so
up.
There are some decisions to be made at that spot.
Yeah, there's no question. And quite frankly, the Giants also need to figure out how much faith they want to put in B.J. Goodson, who was really supposed to be a blossoming middle linebacker this year, but spent so much time on the injured list and on the trainer's table that I'm still not 100% sure if they know what they've got.
No, I think that's a very good point. I remember, you know, all offseason we talked about how he was ready to take control of the defense, the middle linebacker spot, and he looked good against Dallas in that opener, had double-digit tackles. I mean, he lived up to it, but then, you know, it's the old story. You're not going to be used to the team if you spend all the time in the tub, as opposed to being on the football field. And that's what really hurt B.J. Goodson's development this season, is plagued by injuries. Every time it looked like he was taking a step forward, something was re-aggravated or something to that standpoint. And the other thing is, you know, Dave Gettleman's going to have his own opinion of B.J. Goodson compared to what the previous regime thought of him too. See, that's the key here. Dave Gettleman has no ties, Paul, and I can't emphasize this enough,
other than
Eli Manning and Zach DiAssi. Those are the guys that, you know, he pretty much has been with. Other than that, you know, everything's new to him. He has had his opinions of these guys as they've come in through the draft.
Well, he knows Jason.
Correct. Yes, he does know JPP as well. So I stand corrected. Three guys then, if you want to take that into consideration.
But you know, the one thing that I really think that everybody should take comfort in is that he is such a film junkie. And, you know, as he said, he'll watch tape until his eyes are bleeding. You know, this is a guy who is going to go in and just dig and dig and dig, and he will put together his own personnel file on every single one of these guys.
Yeah.
And he will have a concrete belief in every move that he makes.
Absolutely. Let's head back to the lines. Joe's in New York. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing? I have a quick question. If Davis Webb was coming out in this year's draft compared to all the other quarterbacks, where would you rank him? Like, would you say he's better than those quarterbacks coming out, or where would you guys place him?
Well, it's interesting.
It's an impossible hypothetical because he would have had another year to develop.
Correct. So you have to take that
into
consideration. But I will add that we did have Tony Pauline, one of the NFL draft analysts on our final radio pregame show. And we did pose that question to him. How would he rank Davis Webb compared to this cluster of quarterbacks? And he still indicated that this cluster of quarterbacks would have probably been taken ahead of Davis Webb. Now, I'm not saying every single quarterback. I'm referring to the Rosens, the Darnolds, and the Mayfields of the world. And then probably you could throw in Allen as well. Those four. He indicated to us on our Giants pregame show. But I think Paul brings up an interesting point. You're going based on Davis Webb's resume up through the end of his collegiate career. If he was still in college, his resume, his stock may have gone up depending on how he performed this season. So
there's really no way to tell.
Yeah, it's very difficult. But I'm just giving you the opinion of what Tony Pauline, who we did have on our Giants pregame show at the tail end of the season.
Yeah, because what I think, like, when the new coach comes in, I think he should look, you know, at what he thinks of Davis Webb compared to the other quarterbacks and make a decision based on that as to whether he needs to draft one or not. And also I hear a lot of people saying that the Giants should draft Barkley. I don't think taking a running back at number two is good because a running back's span is only 4 to 5 years. So to me, that would be a waste, especially since you have a number two that's so high. You know what I'm saying? So I just don't think they should take a running back at number
two. Well, I think, to be honest, I'm – look, I agree with you. Generally speaking, the philosophy is you don't take a running back at two. I agree with that philosophy in general. He is a special guy. He is a tremendous talent, a dynamic game breaker. If the Giants are able to fix the offensive line and at least get most of that done in free agency, and then they've got a really good concrete plan that they're going to be able to execute one in the draft, I could certainly see them making that pick. I don't think it's out of the question. But I really believe that before you can have a serious conversation about going the Barkley route, you have to see what they do in free agency first. Because right now, we really don't have any idea of what this offensive line is going to look like in March, never mind April or August. And if this offensive line is not fortified, taking Barkley is not going to do much for you.
And here's what I'll add to that. And we had this conversation about a week ago on Big Blue Kickoff Live because people were going back and forth about the pros and cons of taking Saquon Barkley. I'm with Paul where if you feel the other areas of your team you have addressed in free agency and you feel you're ready to bring in a running back, then I think there is value. I don't think it's a stretch. He's certainly a dynamic talent.
Yeah.
With that being said, I went back and I looked at the top 10 rushing teams from this season and looked at their starting running backs, where they were drafted, how they were acquired. Of the top 10 rushing teams in the NFL, and I tweeted this out if you want to go back, it was January 16th, just three of them, three of the top 10 rushing teams had a starting running back that was taken with a top 10 overall pick. That was Jacksonville with Leonard Fournette, Dallas with Zeke, and the Rams with Todd Gurley. Now, it's four. It goes to four if you want to consider Christian McCaffrey as the starting running back of the Panthers because they still have Jonathan Stewart. He's more of a jack-of-all-trades type of guy. If you want to go a little bit more, four of the ten. Okay? So here's some of the other top ten teams. Philadelphia was three this year. Jay Ajayi was a fifth-round pick. He was acquired via trade. He wasn't even drafted by the Eagles. New Orleans. Kamara was a third-round pick. Mark Ingram was a late first-round pick because they have a two-headed monster, both are Pro Bowls. But Ingram wasn't a top-ten pick. Mark Ingram was a late first-round pick. Buffalo has LeSean McCoy. He was a second-round pick, and he was acquired via trade from Buffalo. As we continue to go down the list, Minnesota was the seventh-ranked team. Latavius Murray, sixth-round pick. He was signed as a free agent after leaving Oakland. Kansas City with Kareem Hunt. He was a third-round pick. And New England, which was the top-ten rushing team, too, was bottom top-ten. Deion Lewis is a fifth-round pick, and he was a free agent.
And you're missing the key item of that list. Every single one of those teams
offensive
has a solid offensive
line. Of course. I mean, that goes without saying.
And but that's the overriding factor.
And I agree with you.
If you don't have the solid offensive line, nothing he said even holds any water at all.
But
you got to get the O-line fixed.
But the bigger point, and we'll let you continue. I don't mean to cut you off. Once you have the offensive line, that doesn't mean you have to have a top three pick to run the ball effectively.
Agreed.
That's my larger point.
And that's agreed. Sure.
I guess my only concern with the pick is that, you know, when it comes to the quarterback, I just want them to make a – I mean, it's very hard to know, you know, you can pick a quarterback at that spot and still be a bust. But I just don't want to be in the Dave Brown, Kent Graham era again because I just couldn't handle that.
Just remember, Dave Brown was a supplemental number one. I mean, you know.
Right.
Just remember that. That, you know, George Young thought he was good enough that they took a future number one on him out of Duke. So it's not automatic that a first-round draft pick quarterback is going to do anything for you.
Joe, appreciate
the phone. I agree with you. I agree with you there. All right, thank you, guys.
You
man.
Got
appreciate it.
I
love your show. You guys be good.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for tuning in. All right, here's where the turning point of the program starts. He's not going to get his intro played because that's not a school of thought that I subscribe to, but unfortunately, Charlie in Portland, Maine joins us. Charlie, what's happening?
Hello.
Oh, Charlie, by the way, before you get started, Charlie, congratulations, Charlie. Will Beatty is going to another Super Bowl.
That's right.
Okay, just wanted you to know that.
He's going to hold up.
Yes.
Will he be active in the game?
Yeah, well, that's the mystery. But Charlie had a celebration in the corner of his house somewhere because Will Beatty, he's going to the Super Bowl. Whether or not Will Beatty plays or dresses, that's not the point.
Okay.
The point is Will Beatty's going to another Super Bowl.
Gotcha.
Anyway.
Go,
yes.
Charlie.
Hey, if he doesn't play, I'm not even watching it. What a horrible football day. The Pats and the Eagles. The only thing worse than the Pats and the Eagles would have been the Pats and the Cowboys. That would have been even worse. But this is what I would have done. 2:48 left in the game. I would have had Bortles go into the little tent, the health tent, switch his jersey to number 10, and just trot out on the field and scare the crap out of the New England Patriots.
Yes, that clearly would have worked. Absolutely. Yes. No doubt. The nerve of Doug Marrone for not thinking of that.
You know what is funny, though, Charlie? I know you were listening. Did you hear Tony Romo actually drop the names of David Tyree and Mario Manningham during that broadcast?
Yeah, I did.
He absolutely did. You know, because Romo knows who winners are. That's why he doesn't look in the mirror in the morning.
Well, I think we've pretty much tried to throw a zinger the way of every NFC East team. Have we not? Did we cover the Redskins yet?
No.
Okay, we're an equal opportunist program, so. Yeah.
Well, we don't have to worry about the Redskins. Hey, at least now we can. If Shermer is our coach, we're going to find out probably tomorrow. And then they can get the staff together. We'll find out who that is.
Oh, Charlie, they called you up to give you the scoop? That's interesting. I didn't realize this. Look at this, Charlie, breaking news on our program.
Because Sherman's doing some exit interviews today.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's going to take a flight out tonight.
Very nice.
He'll be in New York tomorrow.
Do you know his flight number, Charlie? You know his flight number? Are you going to greet him at the airport, too? All right.
No, I'm not going to go all the way out there for him. If it was somebody else, I might. But, hey. Like I said, if Beatty's not inactive, I'll watch the game. But if he's inactive, I ain't going to watch the Super Bowl. I can't stand either of those two teams. And Jacksonville blew it. I can't believe it. They should have won that game. Again, the referees, that interference penalty to me was like ticky-tack. But, hey, what are you going to do? They blew it. But they're vulnerable. I think the Pats defense is vulnerable. And it's gonna come down to the Philadelphia's defense. If they can put pressure on Brady, I think they could possibly win that game because I think they can score points on Pat's defense. It's just they got to slow down their Brady's offense. But
Charlie,
it was an ugly day. It was an ugly day.
Appreciate the phone call, and I mean probably gonna regret this, but I think Charlie does bring up a good point with one of the last things that he threw out there. He's right. The Eagles do have some similarities, Paul, to the Jacksonville Jaguars in terms of their pass rush. Can certainly get to Tom Brady.
Yes.
They have the weapons to do that. The Philadelphia defense is also opportunistic. They've got a very good special teams unit. Remember, their special teams units and defenses have scored touchdowns like it's nothing over the last few seasons. It's been a big part of the identity and the culture of the organization. And
Belichick stresses special teams on the other
correct.
Side of the ball.
So you know that's going to be a big focus for New England. They're not going to want field position to drastically change how that game plays out. But, you know, to me, the big thing is Nick Foles was outstanding last night. I mean, you got to give him credit. He made all the plays. He handled himself very well in the pocket. But Nick Foles has not necessarily done that consistently over the course of his career. Was that a flash, Paul? Can he do that again against New England? Because they're going to need that Nick Foles to show up again.
Yes.
They're also going to need Alshon Jeffery and Zach Ertz and all these other skill positions to make those types of plays consistently. You can't do it for one quarter against New England. You can't do it for one half against New England. You've got to do it for four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
I think Philadelphia has the elements. No disagreement with anybody that wants to bring up that point. My question is, are we going to see that consistently for four quarters? That's the mystery.
You know, for me to even be critical of him or the Eagles would be foolish after – you know, I was pretty much darn right sure it was going to be the Giants and Redskins battling for this division when we talked about it in August. And I really thought that Dallas was a lock not to make the playoffs because I was counting on Elliott being suspended. So that one worked out. But I did not see Philadelphia being in the top two in this division, never mind the top two in the conference. And they have really come together, played extremely well. It's funny, they had a heck of a time in a steel cage match twice against the Giants, the Giants gave them fits. And yet, look where they're going.
Well, it's funny because two of the best Giants games this season, and there weren't many, were against the Philadelphia Eagles.
Question.
I mean, in terms of specifically the offensive production.
Without a doubt.
It came against Philly. I think part
they
of that is...
They carved up that defense.
Part of that is, for some wild reason, no matter who's been the defensive coordinator for the Eagles over the years, over the decades, it's just a good matchup for the Giants, Paul.
Yet
it's always
Eagles,
a good matchup
the Eagles
for the
have
Giants.
Dominated the series in terms of one loss record over the last half a
they
dozen
have.
Years.
They have. Now,
But, again, having said that, the Giants gave them the toughest fits of all this year.
I agree with you. I think that's been well documented. It hasn't necessarily translated to wins, to your point. But
that's Eli, though, to be perfectly honest.
Well, that's why I go
more
back.
More than anything else, that's Eli.
And I go back to matchups, too. I mean, it's just there's something about Eli understanding the tendencies, knowing how to handle that pass rush, and therefore he has a very good track record of having success. And also, it's a division rival. You tend to get a feel for these teams, too. That certainly helps as well. Because keep in mind, Minnesota's not seeing Philadelphia as often as the Giants are.
No.
Okay? You have to take that into consideration. You can't dismiss that. Just like when the Panthers play the Saints in the playoffs compared to when the Saints are playing the Vikings, it's different. So that's why sometimes you have one team handle one defense miraculously, and then the following week... Well, why is that same great offense struggling? It's because they understand what Carolina is going to showcase. They saw them two times during the regular season. You're not seeing up close and personal.
That's fair.
Those other defenses. You can't dismiss that. Let's head back to the lines. Mark's in Chicago. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi. All right, Mark.
I expect to be talking about the Patriots today when I called in, but let me just give you my perspective of the referee-type discussions. I think the thing that bothers most people is that whenever there's a controversial call like that pass interference or that head bob penalty last week or the offensive interference penalty last week, it always gives the Patriots another chance and they go down and score a touchdown to be a turning point in the game. And I think that's what bothers most people. Obviously, it's not a conspiracy because they have to go make the plays afterwards, but it's always those things that just seem to irritate them because they're just so damn good, you know? So...
Yeah, and
anyway,
they execute. Listen, that's the bottom line. They execute. They do it consistently, yeah. More so than other teams.
Yeah. But anyway, the reason why I wanted to call is I wanted to talk about sort of my view of the draft, and I'm going to present sort of an aggressive strategy for the draft that no one's really presented thus far. I think that despite Maris saying the Giants need to be good or expects them to be good next year, I think Gettleman realizes that we need to rebuild this team through the draft. We have so many holes on this team. You can't do it through free agency, especially with the light of the cap situation. So if I was the GM, this is sort of my high-level strategy that I'd try to do. And it's going to take guts, and it's going to take salesmanship. But what I would do is I would try to trade our number four down to Cleveland, give them the number two, we get their number four. And with that, and I've looked at the charts on value, I would try to get their first and second picks of the second round, give them our first pick in the second round, and those are almost like first-round picks. And from that point, I'd say, okay, Jets, do you maybe want to trade down to number four? We'll take number six. Give us that and a third-round pick. And then go down maybe a little bit further and see if maybe around 10 or 11 you can make another trade, pick up some more picks, and at that point you pick one of those big tackles like McGlinchey, Orlando Brown, who's at Pace? What's the other guy? Connor Williams, I think.
Connor Williams is the other guy.
And what we're doing is we're stockpiling, getting a good player, but we're also stockpiling draft picks in this draft and maybe even into next year. I mean, you know, I don't want to see us go down the route. Well, we got to be good next year, and we do something like Reese did, and he overspent in free agency, which in what I think is very poor results. and rebuild through the draft and just stockpile picks. And the team that has the most picks that would be willing to, I think, entertain a trade like this is Cleveland. They've got like 12 picks in this draft.
Yeah.
Let's do some salesmanship.
I'm going to help you out on this one a little bit.
Use that as a benchmark to accumulating more picks.
By the way, do you have the draft order? Can you call it up a second?
I can bring that up, yeah.
Number one, my understanding is that Cleveland is not interested in giving up those two picks. They're probably, in all likelihood, going to take a quarterback and then Barkley at number four if he's there. They're not looking to trade those picks. They want to use them. Because they
see, that's where I say the salesmanship comes in. You say, you know what? You know, we're going to take Barkley at number four.
Okay, now.
You want Barkley? Give us the number two and give us your two in the second round.
Here's what I'm going to say.
That's what I'm saying. It's guts and salesmanship.
We are both totally on board with you in trading the pick. That is my first priority, is to trade the pick. I agree with you. Get the shopping cart load of picks and see what you can do about this team. But I want to go a little bit further here. What I'm suggesting is possible trade partners, because I don't know that the Giants and Jets are going to make a deal. That's going to be hard to do.
That'd be very hard to do, yeah.
But I think that the Broncos at five could certainly use a quarterback. And, again, I don't know what they're going to do in free agency.
And that could change things.
You may be able to get them to move up to two.
Yeah, if you're looking for a team that is in need of a quarterback, certainly it appears that way.
And
right
then I also believe, as you go down this list,
click on that.
Go ahead, go click on that. I believe 11 is the other spot I'm looking at. Miami Dolphins.
Miami.
Miami Dolphins at 11.
I don't know how much they're going to be looking for a quarterback, though.
Cutler?
They got Ryan Tannehill. He's still very young. I'm not saying that I'm 100% right. I would put Denver much ahead of Miami right now.
And then, well, I agree with you.
Miami, to me, could be a stretch. I would point to Arizona before I'd point to Miami.
Well, yeah, but now you're going down too far.
Well, but
I don't want to move down out of the top 12.
But Arizona, more realistically, is looking for a quarterback than Miami is.
What I wonder about is if Miami would consider it at 11, and I'm also not sure what the Bengals are thinking. Because they're all talking about McCarron is going to go elsewhere.
Could be a restricted free agent, depending on what
happens. And if they're talking a lot that he's going to get out of there because he's tired of being caught behind Dalton.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of people in Cincinnati who are saying Andy Dalton is maxed out. He's gotten them as far as they can go, and maybe they need to go in another direction. So I'd put calls in to Denver, Miami, and Cincinnati in the top 12 and see what they'd be talking about in terms of that shopping cart load of picks.
I mean, you also need to take into consideration, Mark. You know, Cleveland's a team that's also looking to make sure that it has enough depth for the future, too. So that's why I could see them being a little bit leery of getting rid of all these picks. The reason why they've accumulated the picks is now that John Dorsey's the new general manager, you know, he also wants to make sure that the third linebacker is strong and it's not just worrying about the first 22. I mean, listen, the Eagles did a similar approach. You know, we were just talking about the Eagles. Remember, the Eagles lost their starting left tackle, their starting quarterback, Darren Sproles, their starting kicker. They're starting middle linebacker Jordan Hicks, his replacement Joe Walker. And to your point, Mark, it wasn't just draft picks. It was free agency that helped them stockpile the depth chart.
It's got to be both.
It's got to be a mixture of both. It can't just be one draft alone. I agree with your philosophy, Mark. I'm not disagreeing with you. But you can't look at it as that we're going to make up the depth chart in one draft alone. It's not going to happen.
I'll tell you what, though.
To me, those second-round picks, if we could get the first and fourth picks in the second round, I think it's the first and fourth.
They have first and Cleveland. Oh, you're talking about the second
round. Those are almost as important as a first-round pick. But to me, you know, my whole strategy is we get them to trade. My question would be, okay, Dorsey was with the Packers. There's talk of him bringing in Ben McAdoo as their offensive coordinator. You know, does Gettleman have a relationship with this guy, or is he mad at the Giants maybe that they got rid of McAdoo? I mean, there's all sorts of things going on in the background that you never know about.
Well, the Packers already found a new OC. Joe Philbin is going to be their offensive coordinator.
But Dorsey was with the Packers for a long time, and he knows McAdoo really well.
You talk about the former Panthers quarterback coach you're referring to.
No, John Dorsey, the GM.
Oh, I thought, I'm sorry. I'm mistaken. I thought you were referring to Ken Dorsey.
You lost me there.
Well, no, because he was throwing out Dorsey.
Sorry.
There's multiple guys with the last name Dorsey.
Anyway, we got to run.
We appreciate it, Mark.
But we're on board with your creativity in terms of trying to make a deal for the pick. I think that's the best way to go.
Let's go to Scott in New Mexico. Scott, what's happening?
Hi, guys.
How are we doing, Scott? What do you got for us?
Good. Watching the New England Patriots yesterday is like watching the movie Groundhog's Day. You wake up with the same results almost every single time.
And, relax
and
over
my
there.
Question, my basic question is, why can't other teams duplicate what New England does? Is it a coaching issue? Is it just that they have a better staff than anyone else? Is it Belichick himself? I'll take this question off the air because I know you guys are short on time.
Appreciate that, Scott.
I was just curious what makes New England, New England.
Well, I think it's a good question. I think a lot of organizations are trying to figure it out. Number one, you know, having Tom Brady helps a lot. Also, keeping Tom Brady healthy helps a lot, too. The durability of the quarterback is important. I also think guys buying into the system. They have probably, Paul, as great of a track record as any team of bringing guys in, and then they adapt to the roles that they want for them to fill. Most teams can't necessarily do that consistently. So I think that says a lot about their scouting department and just the mindset of the players that they've turned to fill some injury voids or some holes that they have in free agency.
I would add, just simply put, while I can continue to call this the quicksand of mediocrity talent-wise, I think it's that way coaching-wise too. I don't think there are a ton of Hall of Fame active NFL coaches. There's a very small group at the top. I mean, again, go back to the 80s. When you had your Parcells, your Walsh, your Gibbs, you know, Ditka. You had so many outstanding head coaches around in those days. Now, who are your great head coaches? Belichick? Okay. Tomlin, you want to throw in there? I mean, where are the great minds of football?
Well, but
overturned that generation of coaches. And this generation of coaches cannot compete with Belichick. That's a big deal, too.
Well, the other thing with New England, though, is it's not just Belichick. It's also the guys on his staff and the development. So the positional coaches. It's not just the head coach. It's the positional coaches, too.
He does know how to get those guys in and then to buy into the program. Final thing is, too, because success breeds success, you get a lot of free agents who will take less money to go there.
Make sacrifices. Absolutely. Like a James Harrison, for example. Steve's in Pennsylvania. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi. You're right, Steve. What do you got for us?
Guys ahead of me stole my thunder there, but I just wanted to say that I think the Giants should move down in the draft.
Yeah.
And definitely not take a running back, because Giants won a Super Bowl without a number one pick running back a couple of times, like Brandon Jacobs. They need offensive line help, so they should stockpile the draft picks as much as they can. And Eli Manning, I believe he honestly is good for 3 years. He's healthy. He doesn't get injured. He just needs that offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Well, he signed for 18 and 19, so you should have him for another two at least.
And remember, he also has a no-trade clause, too, so you have to take that into consideration as well.
Thank you.
And if Davis Webb, if Paulie, if you say as good as he is, I say stick with him. And another thing, Paulie, when the draft comes, don't talk about how much you like other guys, because it seems like everybody steals it and jumps up ahead of us because they're listening to you because you're so good.
Thank you. It has happened a lot in the last 10 years, I'll tell you that, unfortunately.
No, it's some smoke somewhere.
I got one for you. I can't stand offensive linemen. I don't want any offensive linemen at all. Keep them away from me.
That's it.
The reverse jinx.
Take care, guys. Have a good weekend.
All right, Steve. Appreciate the phone call. The reverse jinx. That's what you got to start
working
on.
Yeah. That's it.
I guess that's the philosophy to have.
All right.
Well, that is going to wrap things up for us. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls we'll try to address as we normally do some of the tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running each and every weekday this week. We've got our very own John Schmelk is going to be the Senior Bowl, so he'll be calling in throughout the week to give us some reports from the prospects, and we will continue to take your phone calls and talk about the latest developments regarding the New York Giants. As always, stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. It's Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Have a good one.